I believe we're going to have a question and answer session, Ruth, so I'm sure that has certainly raised questions for me. Does anybody want to start off and ask a question?
Can I ask a question about fishing? Now, I'm vague on this. It's just out of my son asked me this today when I told him I was coming here. He's very keen fishing. And he said there was I've just come back from holiday, so I haven't seen this program. He's told me to watch and catch up. Panorama seemingly had a program on it about fish farms and great concerns about the River Tay. Normally, there's a fantastic catch there. You're talking about the beginning of the season. And last year, in 2000, it was only four fish or something that was caught because of what the fish farms are doing. And seemingly in Norway, they have some sort of, you might talk to netting there, this is what you're talking about, where they, like the feces from the fish farm, it's just killing off the, so that the rod and line people can't catch. And it's just, you know, people are very much for get your Scottish fish. And, you know, farm fish or fresh fish, that's also a bit of a anomaly, isn't it? So where do you stand with that, or how can that be solved?
So this has been an issue now for decades. When I was working up in Shetland in the 1990s, we were interviewing the fish farmers about sea lice. Sea lice in particular that are the issue, because fish that are kept within a particular kind of density are prone to sea lice, and they will shift the nets around and about to move them a bit. But there's, in my mind, little doubt that the sea lice and the density is a real issue. I've spoken to a number of, I've got friends who have got boats that are collect shellfish. So they go and they dive down into the Orkney waters and collect the shellfish by hand. So it's really sustainable, rather than the old days when they would sort of dredge it all up. And they say that you can see, depending on what way the current's coming, you can see the effect of the pesticides that are being used on the fish farms, and this is an issue for them. Now, I know that the Scottish Government, just because I've been following the progress of it, I know that the Scottish Government has, last year, they closed a consultation about this issue, and they are meant to be coming out. In fact,
I think there was an announcement within about a week of this programme being on television about that the Scottish Government was looking at it. But I think Norway deal with it quite well, but it's very expensive. And I'm just wondering if it's something that maybe hopefully our government might support. Because you know, we would have Scotland the brand if this continues, will it?
So I believe that there is meant to be an announcement being made shortly that up until now, and ironically, most of the companies are Norwegian-owned in Scotland. But I understand that the Scottish Government is looking to, rather than, up until now, there has been something, it's like a code of conduct, a voluntary code of conduct. And I believe that the Scottish Government is looking at putting in legislation for systems. From what I have read, and I'm no expert on this at all, I mean, I'm no expert in anything, I'm just going to read about stuff. What I understand is that the correlation with the wild salmon appears to be the strain that they are being put under by the sea lice. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a huge issue. In fact, just today on the Keep Scotland the Brand Twitter feed, I was putting out about that quality has to mean quality and sustainability has to, I mean, if Scotland's brand is to mean anything, it has to be quality and it has to be welfare. So I am very keen to see what the Scottish Government comes out with. I suspect the reason that the Panorama programme was timed in the way that it was is because they know that the consultation has come to an end and that legislation is pending. So I think, yes, it's an issue. It has been an issue which has been well known within the industry for many years. I mean, the Clyde Fisher Association, Clyde Fishing or Fishermen's Association, have been very vocal about this, as have others. So I hope that the Scottish Government comes up with something constructive, because if not, how can you have a seafood industry based on quality which sort of feeds off the purity of the marine environment if you're poisoning it with pesticides? So I think that in the same way that I think, I mean, obviously you've got an animal welfare issue with the fish as well, but in the same way, going on to land, strawberries, Scottish soft fruit. I mean, I was speaking to the buyer for Spar, who says that he can't believe the way in which so many supermarkets cover Scottish fruit as British fruit, because he says we don't even begin to buy, we don't put fruit on the shelves until the Scottish fruit comes on season, comes into season. And I've spoken to the manager of one of the local supermarkets, who tells me that the sort of the great British campaign on Scottish fruit, he said it's not an economic decision that people are doing this, because he said, I've told my managers time and time again, I can sell twice the quantity of fruit if it is Scottish fruit than if it is Great British fruit. So it's not an economic decision they're doing. The evidence from the Scotland Food and Drink shows that in London, the 25-year-olds to 35-year-olds are more likely to buy a product if it is Scottish soft fruit rather than from anywhere else within the United Kingdom. But that quality is only quality if the strawberries have flavour. I mean, traditionally, the reason why Scotland's soft fruit was the best in the world, and it was the best in the world, was because in the old days, when you had one season, and it kind of came to a peak in the middle, the reason was because our long, slow, rubbish summers meant that the fruits very slowly developed a high sugar content, which gave you a terrific flavour and a really genuine flavour. But if you're looking at produce which is hothoused and doesn't come out of the land, and there's another issue from a gentleman who used to be the general manager for Angus Soft Fruits, tells me that one of the biggest problems that they have with these polytunnels is getting the pollinators, and Mr. Apiarist in the background will know about this, getting the pollinators to go into the polytunnels. He said, now, the difference is you can open them all up and let the pollinators in, but the pollinators prefer those fruits which are grown in the earth than the fruits which are grown in grow bags. He said, so there must be something lacking in the grow bags. So you've got that aspect, you know, all this kind of health properties of soft fruit. But the other thing is, I don't want to buy beautiful big strawberries from Scotland that taste like turnips. So quality has to mean quality, whether it's salmon in the marine environment or whether it is our soft fruits. We can't kill the goose that lays the golden egg. If Scotland's name, and currently I truly believe the evidence shows, and it's not just a belief system, it's this, you know, the evidence shows that Scotland's reputation and name for quality actually means something. But that can only mean something if you continue it. You don't decide just to cash in. And that's one of the reasons why, when I was at a recent meeting with farmers and farming leaders in Stirling talking about Brexit and the future of farming, and one farmer, understandably concerned, said to the panel, well, if the Americans want to come in and put growth hormones in their meat, well, I'm just going to compete by putting growth hormones in my meat. And everyone went, well, no, don't do that, because we will never be able to compete on the stack 'em high, sell 'em low. It always has to be quality. And the other thing is, under WTO rules, if one of the reasons why it is National Farmers Union policy for us to remain within the single market and the common market is because under WTO rules, the number of sheep, for example, the number of sheep available to trade on the international market on a no-deal scenario, all the farmers in the world who are not like the Somalians and the North Koreans and all those other people who don't have deals in the World Trade Organization, a very small and not select club, the number of sheep available for our farmers to compete with is the equivalent of the number of sheep up two Angus Glens. And that is why they talk about there perhaps having to be mass slaughters and bonfires of livestock, is because if we have a cliff-edge no-deal Brexit, you're looking potentially at the end of livestock farming or upland hill farming, for sure, because people will not be able to sell their product, their produce or their livestock. I digress slightly, but you sort of get the wider picture.
I was going to say, you know, you're here talking to us just now, and you obviously do this a lot to other groups. This is maybe going to sound naive, but are the Scottish press in any way concerned or interested in putting this information out in our press, in our newspapers?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I had a journalist from one of Scotland's most popular newspapers. It's the newspaper with the highest sales in Scotland. And he had a long conversation with me. He contacted me one day after I'd been down at Westminster giving evidence. And he said how important it was, because his market is in a rural area. And then decided not to pursue it. But for sure, the agricultural papers are up on it. You occasionally see it with The Guardian, for example. They do quite a lot. George Monbiot, they do quite a lot that's very informed about it. I think part of the problem, I mean, having been a journalist working in Scotland, part of the problem now is that many of the journalists actually don't really do the kind of journalism that was done in the past. A lot of journalism now relies on news agencies. And if there is a story which requires a lot of thought and consideration, they just don't have the sort of levels of comprehension to sort of be able to do it justice beyond the sort of knee-jerk nonsense. There have been journalists who have handled the story and who've spoken to me and have handled the story very well and very fairly, and I think that is to be welcomed. But I am pleased to announce that I am the latest columnist for Farming Scotland magazine, which might not be great shakes to folk who don't know about it, but actually this magazine is in every slaughterhouse and livestock mart. It is in every livestock mart and in many of the agricultural businesses. It's available there. So for reaching people who are within the industry, there's real interest. The Scottish farmer does a lot of work, not just with me, but I mean, you know, they do a lot talking about this as an issue. So within the industry, there's a lot of awareness.
Have the National not offered you a column, Ruth?
To be honest, because this campaign is politically neutral, I would be loath to take a column were they to ask me, and they haven't asked me, so I'm not sort of like, you know, but I think that papers like The National have been extremely strong advocates for Scotland's brand, and they do a lot of work about Scotland's brand. But actually, the thing that I find very heartening is this campaign started at my kitchen table. It literally started because my wee page, which I think about 200 people would look at in a month, you know, it was mainly just sort of me ranting. And I put something up about strawberries, and I had 30,000 people coming and looking at this and commenting on it. And I went, oh, it's not just me then. And so I started sort of talking more about it and producing more facts and making accessible, it's quite technical thing, you know, about Scotch beef, and making those facts accessible to people in a way that perhaps they would take on board. And that was how the campaign started. I kind of came up with this hashtag and just started using it, and it sort of took off. And then I was standing outside the farmer's market in Forfar with a colleague, and because they wouldn't let us in, and he went, we need leaflets. And then about literally a week later, I got a phone call from a guy up in Peterhead who went, your campaign, we need leaflets. And he helped us sort of get this. So the campaign, actually, the leaflet here before you was born out of speaking to farmers and people within the industry and people around Scotland. There's about 7 or 8 different sources of input into it. And then it was crowdfunded, and it has been distributed entirely by volunteers. And what the leaflets before me now represent part of 600,000 leaflets which are out across Scotland. 90% of the households in Ross and Sutherland have been leafleted. I mean, there's phenomenal response to this campaign. And because of the grassroots campaign and the conversations that people are having with supermarkets and emailing people and emailing supermarkets, I have noticed, and it gladdens my heart, I have noticed more and more supermarkets talk about supporting Scottish producers. More and more supermarkets. I was speaking to a very cherubic young gentleman at a food and drink conference who was telling me that he's a provider of he supplies supermarkets with soft fruits. And I gave him one of my leaflets. I mean, ooh, isn't this really funny? You know, for 2 years, all anybody wanted was Great British fruit. And now they're all gone back to Scottish fruit. There's only one that wants Great British fruit. Everybody else wants Scottish fruit. And I thought, and that is the power of people. That is the power of people talking and speaking to supermarkets. And in fact, the same week, a gentleman sidled up to me outside the farmer's market. And he said, "Are you the reason I'm getting all these emails?" I went, "Oh, I do hope so." and this gentleman was this GM of this soft fruit company, and he said that they were being inundated with emails about this issue. And then, to their credit, the Forfar Farmers Market, I went and I had a meeting with them, and I presented them with the evidence that I had. I presented them with, I sent them an email with links to these different technical papers and documents and talking about what was going on, and they allowed me into the mart, and they have put up posters, and they are aware about it because they recognise the risk to Scotland's brand, and they recognise what's going to happen. But the clincher, I suspect, to be honest, it wasn't just the Farm Assure scheme going down the toilet, it was the arable, because they sell grain as well. So they now, because this campaign is party neutral, because this campaign is not about the constitution, because this campaign is for everybody, because we all have to eat regardless of our outlook, and I really stick to that as a point of ethical principle, I am welcomed in the marts, and I go around the marts and get a lot of conversations with people, and it is very heartening, actually, the level of understanding and awareness within the industry, and there is growing awareness amongst ordinary everyday shoppers who have nothing to do with agriculture, but it's down to people like you guys to get the message out there.
Could I just ask, I know the supermarkets are the kind of meeting place of the consumers and the people producing, but within, you're saying here that you've been well received, and it's non-political, but there must be people that are farming that are of a political persuasion that they don't actually care if it's got a Union Jack sticker on. And there's the case in point with the potatoes, the red, is it they're produced in Scotland, but he was the first that allowed a British flag to be put in it. Is it I can't remember the guy's name, but is it
Martin?
Uh-huh. And he and that caused a bit of a stir, and that was a number of years ago, and he was quite happy for the British flag to be on his potatoes. So there must be also people in the industry that don't actually care whether it carries, you know, how it's been branded. There must be some that are quite happy. And that is that could be a political reasoning behind them as well.
I was just going to say that is why Ruth is having to do this job instead of the Scottish Farmer and the National Farmers Union doing the bloody job. Because I'll tell you, we've got another name for them. I'm a farmer myself, and when you were on about BSE, Holland's still riddled with it, and so is half the United States, but you don't see it in the news or anything. They don't broadcast it. I know it is. And when it did hit Britain as a whole, McDonald's was the first. We used Dutch beef. But I was one of the young farmers. well, I wasn't young at that time, but we boycotted and barricaded all the McDonald's at the time because we were using Dutch beef, and it was riddled with BSE. So, really, I went off the track. The National Farmer, the Scottish National Farmers Union, should be doing your job, Ruth.
Well, to give them their...
Really,
to give
and the Scottish Farmer. The Scottish Farmer, I've no faith in them for your side of it whatsoever. They'll say one thing and do another and print another.
Do you mean from a political point?
Yes, they do. Been there. I envy what you're doing. It's a great job. And I just wish we know the answer to deal with the problem, but that is political.
So to give them their due, the National Farmers Union has been extremely helpful in making sure that this campaign is accurately informed, and have been very open to. If I approach them and say, you know, so for example, when I was down at Westminster, when I was down at Westminster giving evidence, and they were the ones who made sure that I had accurate information, as were Quality Meat Scotland. So, in fairness to them, I have to say that they have ensured that the content of this campaign, I have access to accurate information, which is in the public domain, but they're just making sure, if I have a question, they will say, or look at this, or look at that.
But surely that is something the Scottish Farmer and the NFU should be dealing with on Country File or Landward. Mm. And they're not. Mm. You never hear a thing.
Well, it's
again,
I can't comment on
political.
That. Yeah. So what is interesting, I make a point with the campaign. Obviously, I've been really strong in emphasising that this is not a boycott campaign. Positive purchasing is one thing, but it's not about boycotts because rural communities need rural jobs. And if a company wants to portray their produce privately in one way, that's up to them. However, I as a consumer have the right to contact them and say, why don't you think about keeping Scotland the brand? What is interesting is that Bartlett's also have Scotty's brand. Scotty's produce. Now, I always buy Scotty's peas. If I'm going to buy tatties, I get my tatties from the farmer's market, or I have a veg box delivered by a local farmer. So I do my best to source locally. Scotty's produce is out there. And in fact, Scotty's has just recently been awarded a contract by Asda to supply all of their soft fruit and veg. So it is interesting to see that the Scotty brand is very successful. And I think the economics of that sometimes are hard to argue with.
But I think it's interesting, although it's political, but it is, even what you're saying there, some of it's also market-driven rather than sort of cultural-driven.
The bottom line for most businesses is money. And even a certain northeastern fisherman who is known for having particular leanings very publicly, I am assured by fish merchants when he's at market, make sure that all of his produce is covered in salt tires so that people can see it comes from Scotland, because the Scottish brand sells. Now, interestingly enough, I had a meeting with the Scottish Government's food and drink team to talk over some ideas and issues and sort of, you know, make a representation to them. And they were very generous in giving me a couple of people, a farmer and a fisherman, time to talk about this issue. Again, to make sure that once people realise that this campaign was a grassroots movement and that I was trying to approach it in an ethical way, but that it had some weight, they have been very helpful in making sure that I'm given information, which I'm directed to information which is in the public domain, but if I'm going to be doing this, it's as well that I'm doing it properly with accurate information. I've had some conversations about this issue, and we were talking about flags, and I said, because this is what I think, is that actually this isn't a pro-flag campaign. I actually welcome the heady days when there weren't flags on food. There were just clear labels. I mean, I don't see food from Spain or France coming covered in flags. I mean, it's nuts. However, interestingly enough, the fishmonger stopped me and he went, well, actually, I go to Boston on international trade fairs selling Scottish seafood. And if his salmon, in fact, comes from the salmon that he sells, and it's very upmarket price salmon, this, because the salmon he sells comes using a technique that has been used since the days of Robert the Bruce, and it's like a lacrosse sort of net, you know, it's a half thing, yeah. And half net, and you stand in the water freezing your ankles off, and if there's a thud and you've squeaked, and if you're lucky, there's a salmon on the riverbed on the riverbank, and he said, actually, I want salt irons. He said, if I'm sitting at the far end of a warehouse, a big show, if there's a big salt iron up, he said, people will come and see me because they recognise it.
Yeah.
However, I was speaking to a Nigerian who told me that in Nigeria, the salt iron isn't known as something which is associated with Scotland. People in Nigeria love Scottish produce, but they think more of tartan or bagpipers. So you kind of have to mix it up a bit. You know, it's not just, you know, when you're promoting Scotland's brand, we have to find ways which goes across boundaries. But understandably, people will make choices when they have their own private businesses. But I think that it is okay, as long as you're respectful, to contact them and say, have you thought about this? Because the time that I was going through Australia, it was 2012, I think it must have been. I was going through an Australian, departure lounge, and that was the first time I saw the monstrosity that is the Great British Haggis, and I just about passed out. And I said to my husband, "Have you seen that?" And we just sort of stood there in slack jawed horror, looking at it. And it's the packaging. It's the London Eye, and it's Big Ben. And we're like, "I said that's haggis. How's that helping our sector? How's that going to help?" And then you look at it, and it's, I think it's in Fife, the lad is that does it. And I've written to him and gone, what are you playing at? You know, so I don't want something which is as iconic as the haggis persuading tourists in Australia to go to London. You know, so to me, it's about market share, and it's about sensible provenance. And but all we can do is speak to people and be nice.
I feel sorry for a lot of these producers that are forced to do this. You know,
yeah.
I used to work in a mushroom business, in a mushroom factory. I saw it about, went bust 20 odd years ago now because of the Irish mushroom flooding the market.
Mm.
And on the conveyor belt, we were on the package system, half of them at that time, we did one with the salt tire. It was actually the full top. The punnet was a salt tire, and the other ones on the other line was a union flag, just for a different market. But and I did ask the question all these years ago, why, you know, being a manager, I asked why, because that's what they want. Each shop said, if you want to supply to me, that's what you need to put on it, and if you don't, we don't want them.
Yeah, well, I've had farmers near me up in Angus tell me that they have walked out of supermarkets in disgust when they've seen the way that their produce has been packaged. That they don't know, they have no say in it, and they don't know what's going to happen to it often until they see it.
The strawberry growers, they're packaging their own.
No. So, well, it depends. So, for example, this cherubic farmer, right, from along the Strath from me, they have one line that's their own line, and they package that the way they want to. And he said it's always Scottish packaging because that's what sells, yeah, and they can get more money for it. He said the other lines of supermarkets tell them what to do. And that was backed up by the gentleman from the Angus Soft Fruit Growers, as he was then. And he said that it was dictated to them. What's that?
Yeah.
But there you have the other crux of the matter, which is that for somebody who's doing the packaging, it becomes a question of economics, is that you might think, well, I want to have my produce labelled as Scottish, but it costs more to have two lines of labels going. So if I've got a bigger market, a bigger supermarket saying that they want everything to be the Great British Strawberry, then I'll maybe just do it in all of them because that's cheaper. So
that's the question about economics. About 24 years ago, we were over as a family in Ireland on holiday, and my brother was in the National Executive, and I came back and I brought my till receipt. And when you went into the supermarket in Northern Ireland, you went into the supermarket, it asked for the local produce. So you spent £31 in messages, and it came out and told you £15.85 was local produce. Now they could do that in a till receipt and with an asterisk, and that encouraged people to buy local. Why can't we do that here?
We can.
But why only people? They tell me it's because Morrison's is an English supermarket, that's why I've got to accept Union Jack's on it. But I mean, why can't they do that and encourage us to buy local?
They could.
Yeah, they could do 24 years ago, but why wouldn't
they? Well, that's a question for the supermarkets. And it's a question that we should continue to ask. And that takes me very neatly, thank you, to the Send It Back campaign. And now, it's not my idea, so I can tell you I think it's genius, and I really wish it was my idea. I'm rather miffed I didn't think of it. But this lovely lady in Fife, in Kelty, in fact, we were having a conversation similar to this. And I was saying, you know, yes, well, if you see something, then contact the supermarket and say, you know, ask them to keep swapping the brand, explain, or give it my usual blah, blah. And she looked at me gently. I mean, she didn't make me think I was an idiot for not having thought about it, but I'm kicking myself I didn't. And she said, why don't we just send it back? And it was just an idea of such quiet genius. I love it. And it's about making the point. So we contact, for example, a supermarket, let's not pick one out, but because they're all much of a muchness, or most of them are. So if I write to a supermarket and I say, oh, you know, I take a photograph, please could you think about this and give me an answer as to why this is your policy, and they might get back to me. But her idea is lovely because she said, well, why don't you know? So the thing is, you get your caller, somebody was saying that they'd bought a cauliflower. You'd bought a cauliflower, and you really wanted your cauliflower. And like me, I go to the local Co-op, and if I didn't get my box from the local farm, then there'd be quite, you know, most of the stuff in the local Co-op, regardless of where it comes from, it's hard to find where it's come from. It's all Great British food, which is technically correct. Let's not forget that. But I want to know where it's come from. I want to see clearly where it's come from. And actually, I don't see why a neep should have a bit of plastic wrapped around it. Let's get rid of single-use plastics for a start. So, local procurement, food miles. These are all issues that we have to think about. We have to regain the farm-to-fork connection. Now, I'm really pleased to see that in Tayside, for example, there's an initiative which is trying to put Scottish food on the menu. We produce some of the best food in the world. We should be feeding it to our kids, mm-hmm. not just... Well, not even that. But the thought of like spending... Again, it was the wonderful Jim Fairley who said, I think it's 70 pence or 71 pence that is what's spent on a school lunch. Now, these are kids too often don't get a decent meal in the day apart from their school lunch. And we're spending 71 pence on it. I mean, you know, bread that can last a fortnight. How about we get local bakers involved? How about the Dumfries and Galloway did a terrific job showing that it is possible for local food and drink businesses to be involved in procurement, and that you could get organic, fresh food on the tables and it was cost neutral. We can do it, so let's do it. Let's get, one of the reasons why the Bistro of the East, two of the prominent German supermarkets still had food in their shelves is because they have a policy of having a low, a local infrastructure where there's low distance between the shop and the farm. Let's get a farm to fork connection back, which is actually meaningful. So this woman's idea is that if you buy your cauliflower and if it is not clearly packaged, you make sure, or clearly labelled, you make sure that any packaging that you have is clean and it's dry, because we want to be respectful of our postal workers and people handling it. And whether it be chicken, make sure if it's chicken wrapping, make sure that's properly cleaned and dried. but you send it back. Now, if you want to know how to send it back free post, because most people won't tell you, it will be easily available, just go to your favourite search engine and put in the name of the supermarket and put free post address, and it should pop up, because for consumer legislation, they're supposed to let you send stuff back. So you send it, you get a nice recycled envelope, get the free post address, get your packaging, get a nice little cheerful note, because quite frankly, we should make people's days a little better and try and get them on board. So I've sent in the past nice letters. Some people have sent Christmas cards or Easter cards. Some people, I've written doggerel along the lines of, it did make me mutter when I couldn't find Scottish butter upon my shelf. And just ways of making people's day go a little better and nicer. And then you send it back to the customers affairs managers. Now, what that does is, some people say, oh, well, you know, I spoke to the cashier about it. And that's fair enough. However, let's bear in mind that most cashiers are probably pretty busy. They probably are under pressures of time. Quite frankly, if people shopping or anything like me, they're probably a bit fed up with seeing my face, and you're just right, okay, fine, but they're trying to be nice, make my day nice. So let's make people's days nicer, and let's put the problem to the people that are paid to deal with it. If you send a letter to customer services, they have to log that. So they've paid for the packaging, which is probably pointless. Why do you have to put packaging on food anyway? Let's get loose packaging. Let's get loose food that we don't have to pack it. They've paid for the packaging. They are now paying for your postage, which is legitimate, because this is a legitimate customer issue. And they're paying for the postage. And then they have to pay for somebody's time to handle the issue, to log it and hopefully write you a nice letter back. And then they have to pay to dispose of the aforementioned packaging. So I think that the send it back campaign is an act of quiet genius, and would urge you to enjoy it to its fullest and most frequent. And if you think of the amount of packaging that's on food when you go shopping, you could quite happily have 7 or 8 items every day to send back to them separately.
I'm conscious of the time, but I wonder, one of the things which I don't think is enough is made of is the question of actually taste, and people being educated in the matter of taste and tasting something, which is, for example, if you take an egg, you know, different types of egg, 3 range of all the rest and that kind of thing. And I would have thought that would be something which would be worthwhile pursuing, that government should pursue, about, you know, the quality of taste.
Well,
because that then, so just to finish, that then leads on to the question of how we reconnect with our land, which is then obviously a huge issue now in Scotland as well. And, you know, people, consumers, if they were able to afford it, you know, would then choose on the basis of taste, or prefer to choose on the basis of taste, than just taking what's that. But a lot of people, you know, don't actually, they can't tell the difference in taste, because it's not actually been demonstrated to them, the difference in quality of taste between, you know, A of the product and B of the product.
So I have a friend who used to work in France, and she works in the food industry, and she says that at the age of 5, children in France are told how to pick a camembert. And you have food appreciation as part of your curriculum. And I think that, of course, I think that's something that children should be shown what quality is. I mean, my kids, on a basic level, how many Scots mammies, how many of us can remember our mothers as they went to get the milk out from after it had been handed over by the milkman? And you'd open the milk and you'd sniff it first. I still do that. My kids are completely freaked out. They go, Mum, just look at the date. No. You can't beat the nose, but only with some things. So I think that reconnecting with the full experience of food and drink is something, it's such a pleasurable thing. And the slow food movement, that's what that's about. It's about people sitting down together and understanding what quality produce is and how to prepare it, and then actually understanding what a quality experience of dining is. Not fine dining, just sitting down and breaking bread as a community or in a family. But we're losing so much of that on the most basic level. I was listening to a programme in the World Service the other day talking about how many people live in single households, and cooking for yourself, and there are so many things that I think we have the potential to use food for as a way of reconnection. But we have to cut. I think it has to start with schools. I think it should start with parents and families. But I think that schools have got a huge part that they can play in the home economic side of things.
Schools do. Can I just say the next teacher? I think schools do. Some children have never handled knife forks when they come to school. They have nurture classes so that children sit and have a meal around the table. You ask children in class how many of you sit at the table for a meal. The answer is no, they sit in front of the television. It's fast food all the time. So schools do the best they can, but you know, there's so much on the curriculum.
So the reason why I framed that in the way that I did is that parents have the primary duty, but schools are the ones who often pick up the slack of the ones who either can't because they've never been shown how, because they haven't, as children, they didn't have that experience. So my daughter, she's at school and she refused to eat the school lunches. I was delighted when we moved back here, because having lived overseas for years where there weren't school lunches, for after 10 years of lunchboxes for three fussy children, including a country that didn't do bread, so I was having to bake my own bread, and then they complained about it because it was kept in the fridge because the tropics isn't kind to bread. Anyway, so I was so pleased to come back to a country that did school lunches. Like, hey kids, fine, you're going for school lunches, that's fine. And they were really excited because there was vegetarian food in the menu, and they came back and went, Mum, it's awful. And I don't know why it should be awful, because the schools they go to actually have kitchens, and you know, it could be fantastic, but it was just, there were just a few things that the basic ingredients right, but just the time and all the rest, it wasn't there. But as part of the home ec side of things, but they tried, you know, they put courgette and cakes and stuff like that. There's a lot of effort to go into it. But she came home one day really pleased, because as part of their home economics, they'd had to prepare a meal. And as part of the meal preparation, they had to work out how many food miles had gone into that meal. And so there are really good, interesting, meaningful conversations being had. And she was really pleased because she'd won, because the tatties had come from the farm next door and she'd made Colombian potato soup. And the only thing that the teacher said added the miles to it was the fact that she'd used a chili. And I was really cross because she'd used a dry chili from the teacher, but I had them growing in my house. So she could have had zero food miles. But that's that's just me being competitive.
My wife and me were up in the Skye last autumn. And we went into Aberdeen Castle.
We've had this conversation. This is Harris Tweed, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Right.
About the labels.
Incredible. Harris Tweed, but a big youth. Me and Jack, what about you?
So the Harris Tweed issue, that it's really important. The thing about textiles, and I've spoken to a number of people from different mills across the whole of Scotland, and they have a real problem with, for example, some of the mills down in the borders. They've got a real problem with being undercut by tartan tat shops selling substandard tartans and tweeds that have come from overseas, and people go, oh, Scottish stuff, it's not that good, is it? Because they don't know that it's not Scottish because it's covered in tartan. Mm. So I know that there's talk about trying to find ways of helping to protect our fabrics and tweeds. Now, Harris tweed is a really special fabric because it is protected by law, it's protected by statute. And when the debacle, somebody had posted something about this a year or so ago on I think it was my Twitter page, talking about Harris tweed that also had a British tweed label. And originally, initially what the response was, well, British tweed actually is a company, so that's their own branding. But subsequently, I saw a statement out of Harris tweed, which said that they had asked British tweed to remove those labels because they thought that it actually might be in contravention of the Harris tweed trademark, which is very specific. So they had asked for those labels to be removed. Now, it may well be that there is stock which still, that people didn't get the memo, but I have been contacted by tour operators who tell me that it definitely affects sales. If people from China or Malaysia or you know, people who've spent a lot of money to come on holiday, they want to spend money on a high quality item. If they go into a shop and they see a textile that on the one hand says that it's from Scotland, but on the other hand says it's Great British, they will put it back. And one of my colleagues who was in Skye, and he saw this as well, in fact, just over a year ago, and he was speaking to one of the shopkeepers, I'm not sure which shop it was in, but they say that they don't like it because it hits their sales. So there are a number of issues surrounding that, but I would urge most of us have got access to PR in our pockets. The mobile phone, while it drives me nuts, and my children would say that they sort of lost me to my mobile phone over the last year and a half, take a photograph, share it, go online, tag at Keep Scott Brand if you're on Twitter, or send it to the Facebook page, or send it to the company, or use that, use your phone, take a photograph. It's really helpful if you're taking a photograph, for example, of produce on shelves. It's really helpful if you can take a photograph which identifies where you are, you know, so that I can if I see it and I take it up, you know, then you can go to Tesco's or the Co-op or Morrison's or whomever. And so it's useful if a photograph is clear and shows any discrepancy. Or I mean, sometimes I've been rearranging vegetables to kind of like take a photograph of it, and I'll put everything back because I don't want to, you know, let's make people's lives pleasant. But use your, if you see something, say something.
Great shot was it, so near Skye, so next to Harris, you know, where it's.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then they had this big Union Jack on it.
And did you speak to them about it?
Yes, it was a good shot.
And what did they say?
They told us that the Harris tweet had then been sent to somewhere in England and been made into like a handbag, and therefore it was quite right that it came back with the Union Jack. And the Harris label's like this size on the product, and the Union Jack label, without exaggeration, was this size.
Well, it's because that if it's a company, I'm thinking of the company calls itself British Tweed. So I can see why somebody would say, well, that's their brand. However, it is not helpful, I would suggest, to Scottish sales. I have noted, having been on recently, I mean, the Harris Tweed has got a tremendous website, and I've been on recently and looked at this year's logo, and it would appear to say that that Harris Tweed, if memory serves, it's Harris Tweed, and they say made in the islands of Scotland, or the Outer Hebrides of Scotland. Mm-hmm. So they have worked to make their label less equivocal, to try and make sure that people can see that it's a Scottish label, because I think that they recognise that they may well be losing sales because of once the fabric is gone, it's hard for them to be able to dictate what happens. However, they definitely did say that they had contacted the company because they felt it was a contravention of their trademark. So take a photograph next time and send it to Harris Tweed Authority and tell them.
I'm sure everyone will agree we've had an extremely informative talk this afternoon, which has really opened my eyes as to what's actually going on there and given me concern for the future of Scottish produce. But hopefully information is power and we can get out there and we can do something about it and stop it. So on behalf of everybody here, I'd just like to thank you so much for coming.
Well, thank you for
telling us all this information. And we have sourced this very carefully just to be from Scotland. And we'd like you to accept this little wooden bowl on behalf of us this afternoon.
Indie Proud, yes, Indie Proud, on Indie Live Radio. Indie Proud, yes, Indie Proud, on Indie Live Radio.